Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska has selected a designer for its library renovation, and Alaskans have been arrested outside Senator Sullivan's office in D.C. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, September 26th, 2018. Unalaska has hired an architect for the island's library expansion. Last night, the City Council awarded a $163,000 contract to ECI Hire Inc. of Anchorage, the same firm that drafted preliminary concept designs for the project last year. Councilors passed the resolution unanimously after testimony from Parks, Culture, and Recreation Director Roger Blakely, who says the selection committee received six bids.
We chose ECI. We felt that that would be the best company for Unalaska. They have a really good way of meeting with the public.
The firm made a handful of trips to the island during the pre-development phase, which proposed expanding the library by 35% to make way for a larger children's section, teen area, and Alaskana meeting room. Blakely says ECI architects will continue visiting so that Unalaskans can provide feedback as the design is finalized.
We want the community to participate. Bring in all the things that you'd like to see and see what we can do to make this project a real beautiful jewel in our community.
The city's capital plan has construction slated for fiscal years 2020 and 2021, with a total budget of $4.6 million. ECI's current contract is expected to cover all scoping and pre-design, as well as 30 to 35% of design work. Grappling with growing demand on Unalaska's utilities, the city is also adding staff at the landfill and powerhouse. The City Council voted unanimously last night to fund three new full-time positions at the Department of Public Utilities this fiscal year. Councilor James Fitch, a former powerhouse employee, says that'll be $435,000 well spent.
This has been a long time coming. And it really needs to be done to protect the safety of the people that work there and to protect the safety and the investment that the city has in that power plant and at the landfill.
Public Utilities Director Dan Winters says Unalaska's power production has jumped 70% since the new powerhouse was built in 2009, while landfill waste has grown more than 40% since 2000. Winter says the added staff will help his department keep up while improving morale, efficiency, and safety practices. And join us tomorrow for our continued coverage of last night's City Council meeting. During the noon news, we'll bring you more on a proposal from the State Department of Corrections that could bring inmates to work at Unalaska's seafood plants. Unalaska's municipal election is less than a week away, and to help prepare voters before they head to the polls, KUCB is sharing selections from last week's candidates forum. Today we'll hear from Vincent Tudiakoff Sr., who's running for City Council seat G. During the forum, Tudiakoff said he supports renewable energy projects, including Unalaska's ongoing study to test the feasibility of wind power.
Yes, I support the meteorological survey that's going to go ahead, and I think it should have been done several years ago. In fact, they did do a wind generation project that failed because they didn't do a proper study. But I would support it because it would help with the fuel generation that we have been using, supplement that energy.
Thank you. And I actually received a question prior to the forum from an Unalaskan who's also interested in alternative energy, so I think I'll just paraphrase that now, seeing as how we're on the topic. And their question kind of stemmed from the fact that this has been looked at before, and many city officials have expressed enthusiasm for the idea, but it's yet to happen. It's been a long time discussed, but it's never really come as far as this person would like to see. So the question was, Would you, as a city councilor, go so far as to commit to, say, trying to get 5% of Unalaska's energy powered by renewables, whether it's wind or something else, by the year 2025?
Yeah, it's. I think it can be attainable, but not in a short period of time. You're looking at 10 years. I say that because it's going to do a study, and we did a study on St. Paul, and they took them 2.5 years to even decide to go ahead. It took them another $10 million to put up the wind generation, run the distribution system. You've got to have that money. Is it, where are you going to get it in your budget? You need to plan for it under your 5 or 6 year program. It's a great start to do the study, and I will support it. But to commit to the year 2025 is not giving us enough time.
That was Vincent Tudiakoff Sr. speaking during last week's Candidates Forum, where he also discussed his concerns about Bering Sea fisheries and his support for restructuring the Department of Public Safety. KUCB is re-airing the entire forum tonight, as well as on Saturday and Sunday. You can catch each rebroadcast on Channel 8 TV at 8 p.m. Again, Tudiakoff is running for City Council Seat G. Tomorrow, we'll hear from his opponent, incumbent councillor Sherry Coleman. A group of Alaskans protesting the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court were arrested yesterday outside the D.C. office of Senator Dan Sullivan. It's a sign of mounting tension in the Senate, where a hearing is scheduled for tomorrow on a 36-year-old allegation of sexual assault, which Kavanaugh vehemently denies. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has the story.
Even hours after her arrest, Suzanne Walsh of Anchorage still wore the plastic ID band the police put on her wrist, and she clutched her charging documents.
When they wrote mass arrest, I believe that's civil disobedience. It wasn't, there's a word for when you block the hall.
Walsh flew to Washington, courtesy of an advocacy group called Center for Popular Democracy, to tell both Alaska senators not to vote for Kavanaugh. She and other protesters filed into Sullivan's waiting room. He wasn't available. Walsh says they chose to stay.
Then we decided to just start telling our stories that we wanted to tell him personally anyway.
Many had stories of abuse they and their family members had suffered. They sang and chanted. A spokesman for Sullivan says the senator was at a hearing and says no one from the office called the cops. But there are rules about protesting in the Hart Senate office building and a limit on how many people are allowed in Sullivan's reception area. Capitol Police came and arrested the protesters in the hallway outside the senator's office suite. Walsh says about 15 people were arrested, but she's not sure how many were Alaskans. She was proud to be among them.
All day today, I felt my mother's energy, my sister's energy, and my grandmother. None of them are alive anymore. And they were all abused in their lifetimes in unspeakable ways. And, you know, my sister committed suicide because of it. So, I felt proud.
She paid a $50 fine and was free in time for an afternoon protest outside Senator Lisa Murkowski's office. Molly Haig, originally from Fairbanks, helped organize that demonstration. She says a lot of Alaska girls are young when they suffer sexual abuse, like Christine Blasey Ford was when Kavanaugh allegedly attacked her. Haig says many girls don't feel they'll be believed.
And I want a world where all teenage girls believe that we're going to care even 50 years later. I wish that somebody had told me that when I was 15 years old, and I want to tell every Alaskan girl that we are fighting because we want you to matter today, tomorrow, and in 50 years.
Haig says she thinks Murkowski is receptive to their message.
Oh, 100%. I think that if there's one thing we've seen today, it's that Senator Murkowski has been more aggressive than any other Republican senator about an FBI investigation to try to find out more information.
But Murkowski isn't actually calling for an FBI investigation. In the morning, the senator sounded like she might be. She told CNN, quote, "It would sure clear up all the questions, wouldn't it?" But Murkowski struck a different note with me.
The response that I made was perhaps somewhat flip in the sense that You know, if there was an investigation here, there wouldn't be as many questions.
Murkowski told me few people realize the Senate Judiciary Committee staff has continued to investigate.
That part of the information gathering process, I don't think has been clearly articulated.
More protests are planned outside Senate offices this week. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And this week, in recognition of National Suicide Prevention Month, we are airing a series from our colleagues at KYUK Public Radio in Bethel. Today, in part three, we'll hear how residents of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are grappling with a healthcare system that is not equipped to help them. So communities like Mountain Village are building support systems of their own. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Village Police Officer Annabelle has thought about quitting her job many times. It's the community that keeps her going.
People on the street would literally just stop and come over and give me hugs, telling me not to give up.
As the community's de facto first responder, Anna's responded to dozens of suicide attempts with little training or support. For now, though, Mountain Village is quiet. It's a dusty Saturday afternoon, and Anna has finally gotten some sleep. And it's the day of the March of Hope. When we arrive at the school, about 15 kids and young adults are goofing off near the jungle gym, unfurling a long banner drawn on butcher paper.
Hi, Silas. How's you?
The March of Hope has been organized by Mountain Village's tribe to promote suicide prevention. It's just one of about a dozen events and initiatives that the community's launched in the past few years.
If YK is not going to step in and help us with these issues, who's going to do the follow-ups? How often are they going to follow up on them? What can we do for their aftercare?
In a region struggling with budget cuts and an overburdened healthcare system, Mountain Village is developing systems of its own. And mental health experts believe this grassroots approach to suicide response is actually more effective than an institutional one. Flying suicidal people all over Alaska for treatment is expensive, not to mention disruptive for patients. And the clinicians in places like Bethel or Anchorage don't fully understand village culture.
We have really short-term clinicians that work in those places. We really don't know anything about how things work locally.
Lisa Wexler is an associate professor at the University of Massachusetts. She started out as a clinician in Northwest Alaska and has studied Alaska Native suicide rates for the past 20 years. In her view, the solution should be to empower communities to care for their at-risk neighbors themselves. Programs that can be implemented locally should be encouraged and funded. Healthcare providers throughout the state agree, though few of their initiatives have actually reached Mountain Village. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel has placed a behavioral health aide in the village, for instance, though turnover in those positions is high. Mountain Village has made do without one for up to a year at a time. So the community is cobbling together grants to fund its own programs.
Well, to me, it's just overwhelming.
Leanna Wild is the program director of Native Connections, the group behind Mountain Village's March of Hope. Funded by a federal grant to the tribe, the group is devoted to mental health and suicide prevention. Wild and her partner, Sharon Alexi, recently received training in suicide response. They haven't responded to many crisis situations yet, but Alexi says they both know how to support people who are considering ending their lives.
They need to feel valued. That helps them to feel like somebody cares.
Mountain Village created its own Department of Justice last February, which tries to address the underlying trauma that can fuel suicidal thoughts. Tribal judges like Eugene Landlord provide substance abuse counseling.
When they sober up, they come and thank me. And I tell them, you're the one that should be congratulated, not me.
The community holds regular healing circles, and a group at the local Covenant Church has created a chapter of Fire and Ice, a substance abuse support group that's similar to Alcoholics Anonymous. These programs aren't perfect. Mountain Village can be disorganized, and none of these programs have the funding they need. But while the Waiheke Delta's suicide rates can be daunting, solutions to the problem can be simple. Experts like Lisa Wexler have found that a single heartfelt conversation can make a difference. In Mountain Village, Native Connections sponsors movie nights, field trips, game nights, and basketball camps, all to build a sense of community. Sharon Alexi says the events help young people build coping mechanisms and problem-solving skills.
It helps them grow and flourish and prosper into a healthy young person.
The March of Hope grows as it weaves through Mountain Village. Sharon Alexi holds a handmade sign and looks excited.
I'm pretty satisfied with the turnout, actually. I saw somebody recording, they're waving, they're aware now. They could see that we're trying to bring hope.
The march ends at the old airport, where a group of about 20 kids gets ready to roast marshmallows and hot dogs. Anna shows up with a large grill, but doesn't stay long.
Mountain Village Police Department, VPO Bill.
There's been another call. About a month after the Walk of Hope, we received a text from Anna and gave her a call right away.
Let me read to you the letter I turned in when I resigned.
After 8.5 months as a village police officer, Anna Bill decided to quit. And in the fourth and final episode of this series, we're going to find out why. In Mountain Village, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
Tomorrow, we'll hear that fourth and final story on suicide and treatment in Mountain Village. If you or one of your loved ones is struggling with suicidal thoughts, please call the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-8255 or call USAFE at 581-1500. This week, Unalaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence is hosting its annual Make a Difference Dinner for suicide prevention and awareness. The free community event is billed as an evening of sharing and inspiration. It starts tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the high school. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.